And it's just about 3 o'clock. You're in tune with K2O News. We'll talk with Jill Ramiel and other Toastmasters board members about their membership drive. Artist Alexandra Fiat will highlight her exhibit, opening first Friday at the JACC. Economic strategist Clyde Prestowitz, tonight's Juno World Affairs Council speaker, will give us a preview of his presentation. We'll get the details about this Saturday's Juno Jumpers annual show, and that Writer's Almanac, music, and more.
For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Interior Department David Hayes announced his resignation Monday. KUNM's Kerry Young says Hayes leaves the department at the end of June after serving 4 years at the Interior.
Some tribes and organizations have hailed Hayes as being a consistent presence in Indian country, working tirelessly to uphold tribes' nation-to-nation relationships. He is also seen by some as setting a new baseline for the department's engagement with tribal nations. Jared King is the communications director for the Navajo Nation's Washington office. He says Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley thanked Deputy Secretary Hayes for his leadership and insight, adding that Hayes was a friend to the Navajo Nation.
President Shelley just wishes to extend his gratitude, and he wishes all the best to Deputy Secretary Hayes. His expertise in Indian affairs will be sorely missed.
Following his resignation, Hayes plans to teach at the Stanford Law School and serve as a senior fellow at the Hewlett Foundation. For National Native News, I'm Kerry Young.
Two billboards in Colorado featuring images of Native Americans to make a gun rights argument are being called offensive and insensitive. The billboards feature three Native Americans, one holding a rifle, with the words, "Turn in your arms, the government will take care of you." Lamar Advertising of Denver, the company that owns the billboard, said local residents from the town of Greeley in northern Colorado purchased the space, but a spokesman for the company said the individuals asked to remain anonymous. Critics of the billboard say the message takes too narrow a view of a much more complicated history and makes light of atrocities committed by the federal government against Native people. The National Congress of American Indians has announced Brittany Simplicio of Albuquerque, New Mexico, as the recipient of their Native Graduate Health Fellowship. KUNM's Rita Daniels reports the fellowship includes both a financial award of $5,000 and professional development in tribal health policy.
Simplicio, a Navajo nurse midwifery student at the University of New Mexico, is working to revive traditional Native childbirth practices. Upon graduation, she will be only the 11th Native nurse midwife in the country. Commending Simplicio for her commitment to strengthening the health of tribal nations' youngest members and their mothers, National Congress of American Indians President Jefferson Keel said, "Healthy Native children and families are essential to strong tribal nations," and that they look forward to assisting her in both her professional development and ongoing efforts to improve Native health as a nurse midwife. Simplicio says she is spearheading efforts to establish a sustainable rural birth center that would serve Navajo, Pueblo, and Apache families and bring a traditional birth option back to the Native community. For National Native News, I'm Rita Daniels.
Tom Arvizo Jr., president of Unity Journalists for Diversity, announced his resignation Monday, citing frustration with the organization's lack of movement under his leadership. Arvizo is also a member of the Native American Journalists Association. According to the Unity website, Arvizo will step down to focus on his work as publisher of the Navajo Times. Unity Journalists for Diversity is a national coalition of Native American, Hispanic, Asian, and lesbian and gay journalists. Arvizo has served as Unity president since January. In the interim, Doris Truong of the Asian American Journalists Association will serve as acting president. A petition has called for Columbia University of New York to create a plaque recognizing the land the university sits on is former Lenni Lenape territory. Columbia's Native American Council says the petition would acknowledge the original inhabitants of the area before they were persecuted and removed. Over 500 people have signed the online petition. University officials say they will meet with the council this week to discuss the request. However, Columbia's Native American Council says they anticipate a long bureaucratic process before the plaque could be installed. On this day in 1999, the Alaska Native Heritage Center opened its doors in Anchorage. The center highlights the heritage of Alaska's 11 Native cultural groups. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And we're back on a Juneau afternoon. I'm here with some folks from the Toastmasters Club, and they're here to talk about a membership drive they're doing. So could I have you all introduce yourselves?
Certainly. Thank you, Danny. I'm Brian Besnick. I'm a member of both Toastmaster Clubs in Juneau, and I'm also the area governor for Southeast Alaska.
Excellent.
And I'm Velia Elstad. I'm a member of Taku Toastmasters, and I'm also on Taku Toastmasters' board of directors as their vice president of membership.
I'm Jill Ramiel. I've been a member for about 8 years. The past 2 years, I've been the vice president of education, and I'm the incoming president.
Excellent. And so how many Toastmasters clubs are there in Juneau?
We have two clubs in Juneau. We have the Taku Toastmasters that meets downtown here in the downtown at the Federal Building at noon on Mondays. And then for the early bird people, we have the Valley Toastmasters group, which meets, what time is that, Brian?
It meets Tuesday mornings at 6:15 at the community hall of the old St. Paul's Church, right on Egan or Glacier Highway there.
And what is the club about? What is the club all about? Could you answer that for me, Jill?
Sure. I think people think of Toastmasters as being all about public speaking, and it is if you want it to be, but it's mostly about growing your communication and leadership skills, and it's mostly for your own personal development, and you could do it as quickly or as slowly as you want. There's endless chances to keep on growing within the organization, and I work on two different tracks in the organization. I work on both my public speaking skills and my communication skills, and I also work on my leadership skills.
And how big is this organization? What's the kind of scope of this organization? Brian, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I can do that. The two Juneau clubs are part of a council which encompasses both Yukon and Alaska, and we have about 32 to 34 clubs in our area. But we are just a small drop in the bucket. There are over 14,000 clubs worldwide. Toastmasters is in over 113 countries as we speak. It is growing by leaps and bounds. We have over 300,000 members right now worldwide. As I heard one person put it, we are the best kept secret, considering we're the public speakers, or known as public speakers.
And so what is this membership drive all about? What are you attempting to do here with this?
The more people that come to meetings, the more fun the meetings. So we are trying to optimize our weekly fun.
And you're doing that how?
Well, part of it by being here, just trying to get the word out. And then also we're inviting guests to come and join us at our meetings, and we're posting flyers throughout town, encouraging folks to come and join us.
We're really nice. It's hard to decide to take your first step and come to a meeting because you have no idea what it's going to be like. And I know it took me about 2 years when I read it in the paper every week, and then to actually getting in the room took about 2 years. But once you go, you realize that it's a very supportive environment, and we're actually really happy to see you when you're there.
Could you describe a little bit about what it's like for someone just walking through the door, what they expect to see, what kind of environment is it like? What kind of atmosphere?
It's similar to walking into probably any large meeting. You're going to see people sitting around, at least in downtown, like a board meeting there. There'll be about 15 to 20 folks there. And people are going to be practicing on doing some impromptu speeches where they've asked a question and they have a minute or two to respond. And there'll be actual speakers every day that are delivering a speech, and their speeches last anywhere from 4 to 7 minutes. And people are getting feedback on how that speech was. And so you have folks that are timing speeches, people that are giving them, and people that are giving feedback on that and how folks can improve. It's a very fast-moving meeting. It runs generally about 55 minutes, so there's a lot going on.
Why should somebody become a member?
For me, and I think probably for most people, public speaking, they say it's the number one fear in the world. It's even outnumbers the fear of death. And I think a lot of people feel uncomfortable out there talking. And this is, it's a fantastic way just not to read about how to do this, but to actually do it and to get feedback on how you're doing. And so it's, you get to put what you learn in practice.
Mm-hmm. It's an hour of your week every week. It's not that much time. And the amount that you learn is tremendous. And you're learning all sorts of different things in one meeting. I mean, you're learning, there are people who give speeches. And then on the flip side, there are people who do evaluations. And if that's part of your job where you have to evaluate people who work under you, this is a great practicing tool. How do you give evaluations to people constructively and well? And a lot of us have to do that in our jobs. How do you do things like this? How do you talk to somebody when you're asking us a question that we don't know the answer to ahead of time? And that's scary for a lot of people. We practice that every single week, and we practice getting in and out of a meeting quickly, that our time is very important, so that we have to learn how to speak concisely and for 1 or 2 minutes, and somebody will ding us if we speak too long. If we can't get our clear thought all the way through, and someone should probably ding me right now, but these are all the things we work at just in 1 hour every week. It's a really jam-packed learning hour.
So on one side, it's practicing public speaking, but on the other side, there's members who are practicing evaluating people, and that's kind of a skill in itself, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, listening is a very big skill, and I think a lot of people don't consider that. That listening is so important, and being able to give feedback on what you're listening to.
Who does the evaluations? Can it be anybody who is a member?
Yes. During the meetings, there's several different roles, and the roles rotate on different meeting days. So, you know, one day you may be a speaker, the next meeting you may be an evaluator, and the week after that you may be running the meeting as a Toastmaster.
That's the job of the Vice President of Education, to assign people roles. And when you join, you could say to me, I want to get in and out. I want to do my 10 speeches, which is the first grouping, our first manual. You do 10 speeches and you become what we call a competent communicator. But say your boss maybe wants you to achieve this goal and you want to do it in 3 months. So you're giving a lot of speeches. But other people could give one speech every 6 months, and you could take it at any pace that you want, or you could tell me, all I really want to practice doing is evaluations, or I'd like to be the grammarian. The grammarian is the person who picks out people's phrases that are really good, or their grammar is maybe not correct when they're talking. If they and ah and you know and so and well and but too much, when I did it right now. We tell each other that all the time so that we can get better in this one little room. We're helping each other so that when we're out in our jobs and in the public and talking to the community, we're not doing those things as much, that we're actually, they're speaking better all the time.
So it's actually, it does sort of seep into your everyday life.
Absolutely.
Communication.
It does. It builds self-confidence. I know when I first started Toastmasters, I wasn't confident in my public speaking or trying to get points across to some of my coworkers. And after being a Toastmaster for 4 years, I can honestly say I wish I had found Toastmasters 15 years ago, because I am so much more confident. I can relate better with coworkers. I can get viewpoints across on how they can improve. I want to steal a Toastmasters meeting and drag it down to my office and say, hey, this is what we're going to do today for an hour.
Well, that's fantastic. It's great to be involved with something that gives you confidence, something that you enjoy. And just remind everyone again how what they can do, where and when the meetings are being held, and when they can jump on that.
Every Monday at noon at the Federal Building in room 541. the Taku Toastmasters meet, so it's right during the lunch hour. It's easy. You don't have to get up at the crack of dawn, but if you do want to get up at the crack of dawn...
We have the Tuesday morning club that meets in the Mendenhall Valley at the St. Paul's Church community room, 6:15 from there. And then we are also looking at expanding another club possibly for Wednesday for it being the state office building workers. That one is in the process of forming at the moment.
Well, Brian, Velia, Jill, I want to thank you all so much for coming on, and it was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stopping, staring. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. My clothes, banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you
Alaska Marine Highway is celebrating its 50th anniversary, and you're invited. Enjoy an open house and tour of the MV Malaspina Saturday, May 4th from 8 to 9 a.m. at the cruise ship terminal. Bring the kids and stay for the blessing of the fleet. Enter the drawing to win a golden ticket worth up to $500 in passenger travel. It's happening May 4th at the cruise ship terminal in downtown Juneau. Learn more at ferryalaska.com.
And we're back on a Juneau afternoon. I have on the line with us Alexandra Fiat. She's an artist that is having a show at First Friday at the JACC this upcoming Friday. Alexandra, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Hi. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, you're welcome. And will you be coming into town on Friday?
Yep, we're ferrying in tomorrow, so I'll be hanging the show tomorrow evening, and then I'll be very excited to hopefully meet some Juneau artists at First Friday.
Have you ever been to Juneau before?
Yes. I live in Haines, and so we were just down for Folk Fest, which we love, and I was lucky enough to show at the Jack 3 years ago, so I'm very excited to have some new work there again.
And what kind of artwork do you do?
I paint, and I use wax and pigment. I use wax instead of oils as the kind of holder of the pigment, so it's got a slightly different texture than oil paint.
That's very interesting. That sounds like an unusual medium. What kind of wax is it? Is it like melted crayons?
Well, it's called microcrystalline, and it's a non-organic wax, but it seems to have a slightly higher melting point, so it doesn't get soft in the sun. So it holds up long term better, I think, than the beeswax does, and it doesn't have the smell either.
Uh huh. Why did you land on that medium? Like, how did you discover it?
You know, that's a great question. I don't really know exactly how I landed on it, except I used to do sculptural work as well as painting.
Uh-huh.
And the wax has kind of a tactile quality, and so I like a bit of a physicality in the painting process.
Why did you choose to be an artist?
I also don't know. From earliest memory, I guess I just was drawn to making things, and mostly that was craft when I was growing up. And at some point, I met a real artist. I didn't really know that they lived. I thought they were all in history books, and so that was very exciting. And then I realized there were actually art schools. So I have a BFA and a MFA from an art institute. I guess I've just always been drawn in that direction.
And could you describe the subjects of the pieces that you make?
That's a hard one because they're very abstract. And what I'm trying to do is capture a feeling or a mood. I particularly love the light here in the winter. It's so dramatic, you know. It's so dark in some ways, and then we have a lot of snow, but there's also this real dramatic aspect to the light that we do have, and if the sun comes through a little bit here or there. And so I'm trying to just capture that, the depth and beauty of that light. So it's the paintings, I think, are made in the language of abstract art as well as landscape, but it might take a bit of looking at them to maybe feel what they're about, maybe more than understand what they're about.
Sure, yeah. And are you from Haines?
I'm not, actually. I spent 20 years in San Francisco before I moved here, and I moved to Haines about 11 or 12 years ago. And I'm still fairly connected to the San Francisco Bay Area. I really like it down there as well, but we live here year-round. But that's where my art background is.
Why did you choose to live in Haines?
I think, like a lot of people, I got off the ferry and I fell in love with it. And I was on a road trip with my dog at the time, and we went all over where the roads went to Alaska. We didn't go all the way up north, but we went through a lot of the roads of Alaska, and I came back to Haines wondering if I still kind of was, if it was speaking to me, and it was, and I just thought, I've got to try spending more time here. So I actually went back home and applied for a summer job. Luckily, I got it, and I've pretty much been here since then.
How does a place like Haines compare to some place like San Francisco?
Well, there's pros and cons to, you know, different places. Haines has an amazing community, and it's just a very, it's a beautiful place. The community's very strong and full of a lot of energy. There's a lot of creative people here doing really interesting things. Maybe not as many fine artists, but still very interesting in their creative processes. And I love the light. It really speaks to me. So it's different than living in an urban city environment, but I find it much, much more welcoming.
And the gallery on Friday, it's actually a combined gallery with another artist. Do you know who the other artist is?
I don't. When they applied, they offered that option to share the gallery. My paintings are somewhat small, and so I thought it would be great to share the gallery with somebody. They paired me with a jewelry maker, which is it looks like his work is incredible, but I don't know how much wall space he'll be taking up. So I'm very excited to meet him and to see his work as well.
Oh, that's pretty exciting. Get to meet the artists that you share the gallery with. How cool.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder, have you ever worked in other mediums besides the one that you currently work in?
I used to do sculptural installations, and I used fabrics. Yeah, so when I moved up here, actually, I was working a little bit more with fabric, and partly because I had a very small studio space when I moved to Haines, and it was hard to get materials. I think I gravitated towards something that was a little easier to manage, and I'm still really into painting now. I haven't been doing the installations as much, though once in a while I will do a piece.
What's the actual canvas that the wax pieces are done on?
They're on wood boards, on wood backing. So I kind of build a little stretcher, but instead of stretching canvas, I just put a piece of wood on it, and then that I need that hard surface because I do a lot of scraping. Generally, when you work with wax or paint, it's an additive process, but I kind of do the opposite. I put wax on, and then I scrape it off and put it on and scrape it off because I'm trying to create kind of a mysteriousness to the layering. The light kind of goes in versus being built on top.
Interesting. Certainly sounds like some very interesting pieces. And it's happening. It's all happening First Friday Gallery at JAHC, Juneau Arts and Humanities Council Building, and it's happening 4:30 to 7 p.m. It's going to be a combined show with Rudy Isteris, a jewelry maker. If listeners have any questions about the show or the gallery or anything, you can call JAHC at 586-ARTS, 586-2787. And Alexandra, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look forward to meeting people at my opening.
Well, welcome back to Juneau.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 1st of May, 2013. It was on this date in 1840 the first official adhesive postage stamp was issued. In Great Britain, up until then, the recipient of a letter paid for the postage. But many people refused, and the calculation of postage had to be figured out, number of sheets of paper, the distance between sender and recipient, and with the adhesive postage stamp, the sender paid, and there was one price. Queen Victoria's picture was on the stamp, and because Britain was the first to use postage stamps, they've never put the name of the country on them, just a picture of the reigning monarch. It's the birthday of Joseph Addison, Wiltshire, England, 1672, along with his friend Richard Steele. Addison was an essayist for the newspaper The Tatler and then The Spectator, essays that aimed to, he said, enliven morality with wit and to temper wit with morality. 1707 on this date, the Acts of Union joined the kingdoms of England and Scotland into the kingdom of Great Britain. They'd had a single monarch for 100 years since Queen Elizabeth I died childless. James VI of Scotland became James I of England. The Acts of Union combined their two parliaments into one. It's the birthday of Bobby Ann Mason, born Mayfield, Kentucky, 1940, raised on a dairy farm. Wrote her Ph.D. dissertation on Nabokov and then set out to write something completely different. She said, since Huckleberry Finn, or thereabouts, it seemed that all American literature was about the alienated hero. I was sick of reading about the alienated hero. I'm more interested in people in the mainstream. So she wrote about rural and small-town people in Kentucky. Her first collection was Shiloh and Other Stories. Her first novel was In Country. Her most recent, The Girl in the Blue Beret. It's the birthday of Terry Southern, born Alvarado, Texas, 1924, who wrote the screenplay Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. And it was on this date, 1931, the Empire State Building opened to the public. Here's a poem for today by Paul Zimmer, A Final Affection. I love the accomplishments of trees, how they try to restrain great storms and pacify the very worms that eat them. Even their deaths seem to be considered. I fear for trees, loving them so much. I am nervous about each scar on bark, each leaf that browns. I want to lie in their crotches and sigh, whisper of sun and rains to come. Sometimes on summer evenings I step out of my house to look at trees propping darkness up to the silence. When I die, I want to slant up through those trunks. So slowly I will see each rib of bark, each whorl, up through the canopy, the subtle veins and lobes touching me with final affection, then to hover above and look down one last time on the rich upliftings, the circle that loves the sun and moon, to see at last what held the darkness up. A poem by Paul Zimmer, A Final Affection, From Crossing to Sunlight, published by University of Georgia Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Kudos to KTOO's news team, honored on April 20th with 5 awards from the Alaska Press Club. First place for Best Media Website, Best Government Reporting, Best Reporting on Crime and Courts, and Best Education Reporting. Second place for Best Investigative Reporting. KTOO thanks Rosemarie Alexander, Matt Miller, Casey Kelly, Heather Bryant, Kelsey Gobrowski, and Justin Hurd for their outstanding work. And visit ktoo.org to find out why the judges named it the Best Media Website in Alaska.
And we're back on a Juno afternoon. My next guests here are Clyde Prestowitz and Jim Clark, who is president of the Juno World Affairs Council. Jim, could you tell us a little bit about the guest speaker tonight?
You bet. First, the Juno World Affairs Council is a nonprofit corporation, and Mr. Prestowitz is speaking tonight at 5 o'clock in the KTOO studios, and it's for free. He'll speak for 40, 45 minutes, after which there'll be questions from the audience. We're just delighted to have Clyde Prestowitz, who's long, I've been long a fan of his ever since he came out with his book in 1988 called Trading Places, which was about the interaction between Japan and the United States and the international business climate. He is a writer for the New York Times Foreign Affairs and has written 4 or 5 books in the interim. And he's here tonight to speak to us about international business as between East Asia and the United States. And it's really a privilege for us to have him here tonight. And I'd invite every one of your listening audience to come. You'll be in for a real treat to hear what he has to say tonight.
Well, thank you so much for the introduction. And your talk tonight, Clyde, is called The Betrayal of American Prosperity. And that's also the name of your newest book. Could you just tell us a little bit about what the talk tonight is going to be about?
That is the name of my newest book. But I'm going to talk about the decline of the U.S. economy from about the mid-1960s until the first decade of this century. But I'm also going to talk about the resurrection of the U.S. economy. So essentially, I'm going to talk about how we lost it and how we're getting it back, or how we might get it back. So I wanted to leave everybody with a little bit of hope.
Sure. That's always good. And what could you explain a little bit about just the work that you do with your with the Economic Strategy Institute?
Sure. The Economic Strategy Institute is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, educational Washington think tank. We focus on analysis of the global economy, what's happening in China, what's happening to the euro, what's happening in Mexico, how's that affect the United States, what policies should we be pursuing to improve U.S. performance in the global economy, that kind of thing. We write books, we write articles, we testify before Congress, we consult with the administration, we try to make people in Washington do the right thing.
Excellent.
Hard to do.
Why is it important for people to get informed about global economics?
Because we live in a global economy. The United States is not a self-sufficient economy. think about globalization when you pick up your iPad or your iPhone, and you think Apple is an American company. It is. It's headquartered in the U.S., incorporated in the U.S., but your iPad, for example, the semiconductors are made in Korea or Japan. The electronic display is made in Taiwan or Korea. The assembly is done in China. Parts are inserted from Germany. So that product is a global product. It's not an American-made product. It's a global product.
And so that's just kind of like an example of globalization?
Well, it's one example of globalization. I don't know what kind of car you drive, but chances are a large percentage of your car is not made in America. You're here in Alaska. You're a big energy producer, oil producer. Oil is a global commodity, so you operate. The Alaskan economy operates in a global market. It doesn't operate in a domestic market. We can't really understand our lives unless we understand the global economy.
And I caught this phrase in the title of the speech, and I was wondering, could you explain what the post-dollar era is or what that means?
Yes. The U.S. Dollar is not just the U.S. currency, but it's the reserve currency for most countries in the world. And so what that means is that the central bank of China, the central bank of Japan, central bank of Germany hold a large part of their reserves in dollars. Also, international trade is largely denominated in dollars. So if Germany sells something to China, they don't sell it in Deutschmarks. They sell it in dollars. And the Chinese buy it in dollars. The U.S. dollar has become so widely held, and U.S. international debt has become so high. So America has become the world's largest debtor. We have about $6 trillion of international debt, and there has been a feeling that at some point the dollar may not be a reliable currency. Chinese have raised the issue of trying to have the International Monetary Fund create a new international currency. Some people until recently thought that the euro might be an alternative to the U.S. dollar. In view of the problems in the EU and of the euro right now, that's not an immediate prospect. But there is increasing unhappiness around the world with the role of the dollar and pressure in various parts of the global economy to come up with an alternative.
I was just curious what your thoughts were on the Bitcoin invention on the Internet. It's this website, and it says that it's a form of currency that has no central authority.
That's right. That's right.
And how does something like that is going to kind of affect, what's the potential for something like that to kind of affect the global economics of the future?
Well, it's very high, actually. I mean, I think here in Juneau, you should think of it as Internet gold. When gold was discovered here, it had no central authority. Gold was gold globally, and it was very attractive, and people came to mine it. Bitcoin is a little bit like that on the Internet. It has no central authority. It is a currency. It's used to buy and sell things, and it's very volatile right now. But I imagine that that or other synthetic currencies will find increasing use and also challenge the dollar, perhaps, in the future as a global currency.
I was just curious, too, if you had any thoughts on why is the world moving toward globalization and not, like, localization?
Well, actually, the world's kind of doing both. In fact, some people use the word glocalization. It's moving towards globalization as it always has because of the shrinkage of time and distance created by technology, particularly in the last 20 years by Internet technology. But it's also the case that increasingly global companies focus on making their global products particularly compatible with local tastes. General Motors, makes cars, but in China, they make cars particularly for the Chinese taste. And in fact, the Buick division of General Motors has essentially survived because it's very popular in China.
Interesting. What was that word again? Glocalization?
Glocalization, yeah.
Glocalization.
Right, right.
Well, how does forecasting for the economics of the future help us?
Well, you can't really run your life without forecasting something about the future. You put money into your pension fund. You invest in your education. You build infrastructure for your city or your state or your country. And you do that based on expectations of what is likely to be the most profitable investment or the most advantageous education. So you're always thinking about the future and making judgments about what it's likely to be like. And the more that you have good advice and good forecasts about what the future looks like, the happier and more profitable your life should be.
Well, Clyde, I want to thank you very much for talking to me today. And he's going to be here tonight at the K2 TV studios, free open to the public lecture, tonight at 5 p.m. Clyde, thank you.
My pleasure.
All right.
Okay.
We all know that bears live in Juneau, and last summer, a few were killed because they were attracted to improperly stored garbage, birdseed, and other attractants around homes. This created a dangerous situation for both humans and bears. Juneau's new garbage cans are not bear-resistant, and bears can easily pry them open if given the chance. Secure garbage in a shed or garage until the morning of pickup. Together, we can prevent bear-human conflicts by keeping attractants away from bears. Your actions will keep bears wild and people safe. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And we're back on a Juneau afternoon. I'm here with my next guests. They are Juneau Jumpers.
Woo!
And they're here to promote the annual show that they do. It's going to be on Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Glacier Valley School Gym. So I was wondering if I could just have you guys introduce yourselves, starting over here.
I am Claire Varner, and I'm in 8th grade.
I'm Kelly Olson, and I'm in 9th grade.
I'm Asiana Maison, and I am in 5th grade.
I'm Chloe Varner, and I'm in 10th grade.
I'm Ron Hansen, and I am a 9th grader.
All right. And how long have you all been in Juneau Jumpers?
This is my 5th year.
It's also my 5th year.
I've been in it for 7 months.
Wow.
Yeah. 9 years.
7 years.
Wow. Wow. So what kind of event is this? Is this like a competition, or is it just an exhibition? Or what kind of event is it going to be on Saturday?
Well, on Saturday we're having a show just to showcase all of the things that we do in competition and different tricks and routines that you can do with a jump rope.
And what are some of those tricks? What are some of your favorite tricks?
My favorite tricks are just hand releases where you release the handle and then catch it again in a trick. Different ways to do that.
Okay. How about over here? What's
my favorite trick would probably be the Glacier Bear. It's where you jump in the air and at the same time you swing the rope on both sides and then jump it.
How many people can be in one trick at once? Is there a maximum amount of people that can be in one trick? Or does it just depend on the length of the rope?
Really, it depends on the length of the rope and the turners.
What are the turners? Who are those?
There's single rope jumping in double dutch. With double dutch, there's two turners, two ropes, and then a jumper in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And with single jumping, there's just one rope, one turner, one jumper, all the same person.
And how often do you all have to practice for this show, show that you're doing on Saturday? What is the culmination that this show is? How much did you have to practice?
This show we've practiced for about 2 months, but basically we practice all year long and we work on routines and get our routines together. All this week we've had practice every day from 4:30 to 7 to 8 sometimes, so we're working really hard.
And how do you prepare for a show? Do you do anything special? Kelly or Claire?
It's more of a lot of just, like, practicing all your routines and, like, getting to learn them perfectly. And once you learn them, trying, like, get them with a partner so you know you're on beat all the time.
And, Asiana, I haven't heard much from you. What's your favorite routine?
Well, my favorite is black and gold.
What is that?
Black and gold is a three-part routine where there's three levels.
Oh.
And the youngest does level one, and then the next step is level two, and it gets harder each step with level three at the end.
How big do the competitions get for Juno jumpers? Does it get like statewide, nationwide? What happens?
We've gone to national competitions, and that's all over the nation. Huge competition, a lot of jumpers, really long.
That must be really hard.
It's nerve-wracking.
Also, we have two Juno jumpers that are going to be in the Junior Olympics this year.
Really?
So, yeah.
That's a big deal.
And those same two jumpers got us third place overall at the national competition.
Wow, that's really impressive. So there's a national competition. Have any of you guys gone there just to check it out or see it?
I've gone there twice, and this will be my third year.
What's it like?
It's really big. Like,
yeah.
It's more bigger than you expect. There's like maybe 1,000 people or something like that all jumping, and it usually takes 3 days just
all
to finish
once?
It all.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. No, there's like 6 people at a time.
Oh my goodness.
And it's a really good learning experience for us because there's really good jumpers from around the nation that can come in and teach us new tricks and new ways to jump.
Are there any cool tricks that you picked up the last time you went to a national competition?
The tummy tuck trick. It's like
What's that?
It's a triple under, but when you're jumping, it's pretty much, I don't know how to explain it. You swing, and then one arm goes underneath your legs.
Oh, okay.
And then it's
okay.
You're pretty much doubled over while you're jumping in the air, and then finish it like that.
Well, that sounds complicated. Sounds fun, too. So are you all excited for the show on Saturday?
Yeah.
This
is our end-of-the-year show, and so we're putting it all out there for Juno to come see us. So.
Not pulling any stops, huh?
Nope. This is
going to blow people's minds.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for coming in, and check it out. It's the annual show, Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Glacier Valley School Gym. I want to thank Juno jumpers so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank all my guests for coming on today. Tune in tomorrow on a Juno afternoon at KTOO-FM. Shona Strausser will host. We'll talk to MK McNaughton about her solo show at the Rookery, Undercurrents, opening this Friday. We'll talk with Lorraine Feather, Juno Jazz and Classics performer, about her Saturday performance at TK McGuire's. Dan Fruits and Jeff Brown will be here to highlight their first Friday show at the City Museum. We'll talk to Daniel Becton and Lori Hege about Project Ubuntu, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, that Writer's Almanac, Music, and More. That's tomorrow at 3, right here on K2O.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on DCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at ktoo.org.